Thank you very much for having me at this seminar. So I will be talking about the work I have done with Poli Castro, who is a student at PISA, and Andrei Starinet, who is a postdoc at the INT, the Institute for Nuclear Theory. The title is From ADS-CFT Correspondence to Hydrodynamics. Let me just go to my first transparency. We have heard Joe this Thursday that there is a beautiful correspondence that is conjectured between n equal 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory, which is the theory, which is the conformal theory, where the coupling doesn't run with a type 2B string theory on a certain background. This is a five dimension. There is also another S5. And the strong coupling regime of this gauge theory, four dimensional gauge theory, map into an interesting limit, the supergravity limit of the string theory, where it basically becomes a field theory. So we have a very non-trivial correspondence between a theory where we can, in principle, compute everything. We have a control over the theory with a field theory where otherwise we wouldn't be able to compute anything. This theory is supersymmetric, but in fact, one can break the supersymmetry, for example, by introducing the temperature in the gravity side that is considering not an extremal matrix, but a non-extremal one, where we have a black hole sitting at some radial coordinate R0. And this theory, a finite temperature, would map into a finite temperature strongly coupled gauge theory. And this means that we can deduce from that correspondence the thermodynamics of a strongly coupled gauge theory. That result was obtained some time ago by identifying the black hole entropy in this metric with the entropy of the finite temperature gauge theory. The result is that we have a very interesting dependence. We have the correct dependence on the number of color in gauge theory, that is n squared, the number of color, and we have the correct t to the cube, because the dimension of the entropy density must be energy cube. There is a numerical factor, 3 over 4, by which the entropy at strong coupling is smaller than the entropy at weak coupling. And it is a not very non-trivial result. And I don't think so far we have any mean to independently check this result. I will briefly mention that further in this talk. So one could argue that in the n equal 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory at finite temperature, the entropy density divided by the entropy of a free gas, or the free energy divided by the free energy of the free gas, goes continuously from 1 at weak coupling and 3 over 4 at strong coupling. And we know exactly this number at strong coupling, which is a very striking result for someone who has been doing finite temperature field theory, and know that for QCD, nothing works until we go to temperature of order of the gut scale to get a reasonable agreement with lattice. Okay, so the ADS-CFT correspondence is a conjecture, but it is a conjecture where we have a lot of evidence in favor of it. At zero temperature, we have supersymmetry. There are many, correlation functions that we can compute even in strong coupling because of the presence of non-renormalization theorem. So we can compute, for example, correlator of F squared, one point, F squared, another point, and we know the result is correct, even a strong coupling, and that result agree with gravity, which is the argument in favor of the ADS-CFT correspondence. At non-zero temperature, as I have mentioned, there is no supersymmetry. The theory is a strong coupling. We would think there is no way one can check whether it's work. In fact, I would like to point out on one fact that in reality we know a little bit more than one normally think about finite temperature, even strongly coupled gauge theory, and the key word is hydrodynamics. So let's go back 1.5 century, 1855, where the fixed law of diffusion was the original paper of fixed was published. What is that law means in modern language? Suppose I have a theory at finite temperature, any theory that any interacting theory where I have a conserved current. Okay, a conserved current means that the total charge is fixed. So if I lump together an amount of charge in a big volume, what it does is that it will diffuse away. So that's the same phenomenon you see when you open a box of something, perfume, for example. Then you fix show that we can describe an equation, the diffusion equation, behavior of the charge density as a function of time, starting from an initial condition. So basically, this is the conservation law. J is the current. If we look at the system at large enough distances and long enough time scale, this J vector is proportional to the gradient of the charge density. And the proportionality coefficient here is the diffusion constant. It's very simple. Okay, so if we have a field theory at finite temperature and we have a conserved charge, this means that if we turn on some source that couple to this charge and perturb the charge from the zero expectation value, the behavior will be described by the same diffusion equation. In terms of the correlation function, that means that the retarded Green function, which I define in this way, will have a pole located in the imaginary time, omega equal I dq squared, because the equation here is diffusive equation. Okay?
What happens to causality? I mean, the diffusion equation isn't causal.
Yes. So it will, if you start from a delta function distribution and wait for some time, the distribution will be a Gaussian, but in fact the Gaussian will be cut off at the light cone. And in principle that can be seen here, but I haven't been able to show that it arises from the causality is restored by the SCFT. It's an interesting question. Okay, so but this is a problem that people doing relativistic hydrodynamics has been thinking about for some time ago. Okay, so the actual form of the retarded Green function for the two charge density J0 has a denominator with a pole at the right place. Again, at low, sufficiently low frequency and momentum. And in the numerator, actually, one has a Q square. And one can see that Q square should be here because if this Q, this omega is Q naught, it's the zero component of Q. This Q square should be here because of charge conservation. In such a way that if you think only about Euclidean space and you limit yourself to a discrete number of Matsubara frequency, then this formula works only for zero frequency, because this is the only low Matsubara frequency, you don't see the singularity behavior, singular behavior of the correlation function. Another a little bit more complicated example is the just usual fluid dynamics. In any theory, even if you don't have any conserved charge, we have conserved energy momentum tensor. The energy momentum tensor conservation is written in this way, and usual fluid dynamics is obtained by closing this four equation by assuming so-called constitutive equation that tell me what is the stress tensor, what the stress tensor is in term of the gradient of the momentum and energy density. Okay, so there are two viscosities that appear in this formula. One is called the shear viscosity, and another is the bulk viscosity. The shear viscosity, roughly speaking, determine what happens if I have a fluid flow that occurs, that goes in one direction, say the z direction, but the gradient of velocity is on the perpendicular direction. And then it's called the shear. If the shear should goes away diffusively, and how fast it goes away is determined by this shear viscosity. Okay, so in some appropriate correlator of T mu nu, I should see this pole.
P is a function of T00 in general?
P is the function of T00. Yeah, P is the, in CFT, right, in CFT, in any conformal field theory, energy density is three times the pressure. And actually, in if the theory is conformal, because T mu must be zero, this only one of the viscosity appear. So, okay. And also we have the, we can make up the usual sound wave, that is when I have momentum, then momentum going on way on one way, and the gradient is along also this direction. Okay, this is very general. Now let me be a little bit more specific about the Green function that I want to compute in field theory by using gravity. So at finite temperature, one of the most widely used formalism is the Matsubara formalism. When I go to Euclidean space, when the time direction is compactified, and the theory the theory is just on a cylinder. And the Matsubara correlator is defined this way. If I mean the operator, I should put here the time order product. Well, time is Euclidean time order product of two operators. And if I make Fourier transform, the frequencies are multiple of 2 pi t for bosons, and for fermion n will be replaced by n plus 1/2. Okay, I will be talking mostly about bosonic fields in this talk. In Minkowski space, I can define some correlators. One of the most useful are the so-called retarded and advanced thermal Green function. It's a little bit less usual, less familiar, perhaps. The retarded Green function is zero when the retarded Green function is causal in the sense that it's zero when t is less than zero. So if I make a Fourier transform of the retarded Green function, I find that it is analytic in the upper half of the plane, of the omega plane, the frequency plane. And using, by inserting a complete set of state between these two operators, one can prove that in general, in any theory, the retarded Green function analytically continue to the upper half plane give me the Euclidean Green Matsubara Green function at the finite set of point of omega that is coincide with values of omega. So in principle, if I know the retarded Green function and I know how to analytically continue, then I know the Euclidean Green function. Vice versa, if I can continue from a discrete set of points, the Euclidean Green function, to this axis, then I find the retarded Green function. That is something that usually is very hard, because we know this point. For example, in lattice people know, in QCD, know this point with some finite accuracy, so they cannot make a direct continuation. Okay, more Green functions coming. The usual Feynman Green function is defined with a T, the time order product, and it can also define the Weidman Green function. In fact, in equilibrium, these two are related to the retarded Green function, also by using the complete set of state and weighting by the thermal Gibbs weight. The relation is the following. The Feynman Green function has the same real part as the retarded Green function, but the imaginary part is multiplied by a hyperbolic cotangent of the ratio between omega and two times the temperature, so that if the temperature goes to zero, this becomes the sine of omega. It's very simple. At zero temperature, the difference between the retarded and Feynman Green function is just flipping the sine in the I epsilon. The Weidman is related by is proportional to the imaginary part of the Green function, so that if I am in the limit of low frequency, the proportionality coefficient is T over omega. Basically, the Bose-Einstein distribution computed at omega, or small omega. Okay, so, but only the retarded Green function has nice analytic continuation that goes into the Euclidean Matsubara Green function. Now we want to compute this Green function using IDSCFT. We accept the correspondence, so now we should be able to compute everything. But there is a subtlety when we try to apply IDSCFT correspondence to Minkowski space, and that is in the in Euclidean space, everything is unique. If you fix the boundary value for a field, then the solution to the field equation is uniquely defined. In Minkowski space, there is a horizon here, and we have if we specify boundary condition on the boundary, that well, U here is some fifth coordinate. All the gauge theory is living on this boundary. Solving the bulk equation with only the boundary condition at the boundary doesn't give the unique answer. We have to specify something at the horizon. It's natural to fix the so-called incoming wave boundary condition so that wave only travel toward the horizon, falling in, but there is nothing coming out.
What about the white hole? I mean, you have two horizons, right? The black hole and the white hole horizon.
In the which coordinate? This is I work only in the Poincaré coordinate. So
in the Poincaré coordinates, if you have a black hole, you still have a static space time. Your space time is still invariant under t goes to minus t.
I have t goes to minus t, right?
Yeah, so that's still a symmetry. Uh-huh. Which means the space time is, you know, what's usually considered an internal black hole, which means that. Uh-huh. Describes
it's, yeah.
Both the black hole and the white hole. It has both horizons.
Mm-hmm. Maybe when I present the equation, you can tell. I don't know what does it correspond to in for the what the boundary condition I put on the white hole. I should first say that let me fix one frequency, one sign of the frequency of the wave going into here, and see whether I can, the conjecture is that if I fix a boundary condition at the horizon, then the propagator that I compute is the retarded propagator. When I change the boundary condition to have the wave coming the other way, I will get the advanced Green function. It's probably natural. If it works, then I should find the correct diffusion pole, correct Fick's law when I go to very low frequencies. Okay. So what do I do? In Euclidean space, again, if I am just interested in the two-point Green function, in Euclidean space, I can formulate the IDS-CFT correspondent in very short notation like this. The average of this, when I have, if O is the operator on the boundary, phi is the bulk field that is coupled to it, then the average of E to phi O is can be computed by solving the classical equation of motion and in computing the classical action with a boundary condition. Phi goes to phi zero at the boundary. Now, if I'm interested just in the two-point Green function, it is sufficient to solve the linearized field equation. And then I will have some linear equation with a boundary condition, so typically the solution is easy to find. In Fourier component, it is just some mode function that is normalized to one when it goes to zero, when u goes to zero. K here is the momentum, four momentum. Okay, so then I substitute that to the classical equations, and the quadratic term, the whole action reduced to the boundary term because my field satisfies the field equation. And the proportionality coefficient here is the Euclidean Green function. And I propose to do the same thing for the Minkowski's case with the incoming wave boundary condition at the horizon. Now, let me first try to do that in at zero temperature to check that it's really worked. I have the right retarded Green function. So to be very concrete, this is my operator in n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory, F square is coupled to the Dilatone, and the background field is just extremal metric, just ADS. I'm looking at the mode equation, which has this form, where the boundary is at z equals zero, and the infinity is at the horizon is at infinity. Okay. Now, if I have space like k squared bigger than zero, which I learned by talking to string theorists, that space like k is k squared bigger than zero, then the solution to that equation decays like in the Euclidean case. This is really the Euclidean equation. It's the McDonald, the modified Bessel function that goes to zero and at zero, and everything is well defined. The retarded Green function is equal up to a sign to the Euclidean Green function, which it should be. For time-like k, this is a little bit more subtle. I have I to the kx, and my solution is multiplied to some Hankel function, h2 of z. So what I choose is the following. I will choose my solution so that the wave front always go to large z. It doesn't go from z equal infinity to the interior. Okay. That requires me to flip from Hanker 1 and Hanker 2 when the frequency, the sign of the frequency changes. Okay, so my boundary, this is the solution that I chose.
Yeah, so I think in terms of what I was asking before, it's just a statement that you have nothing coming out of the white hole horizon.
Yeah.
And only the waves going into
the black hole horizon.
And when you reverse it to get the advanced,
then
you have waves coming out of the white hole horizon and nothing coming
into the black hole.
Yeah,
okay. Okay. If I do, if I compute my retarded green function, I will find that the retarded green function is equal to this. It has now an imaginary part. Now, in this zero temperature, we can think about that imaginary part in a very intuitive way. At zero temperature, the singularity of the propagator in term of the frequency, say k0, has a cut from k to infinity and minus infinity to minus k. So the Feynman green function is obtained by rotating, by weak rotation. So it's defined along this contour on the singularity at positive k is below the curve and at negative k0 above the curve. When the retarded is defined here, the advanced green function is defined there. So, and then one can see that it's the sign k0 should be exactly as we have found using this correspondence. Now let me go to finite temperature and redo the same calculation. The n equal 4 at finite temperature, well, the only scale now is the temperature because the theory is conformal. Let me compute something with the F square, the correlator of F square in Minkowski space. The metric is a little bit more involved. With the F function here, the horizon is moved from infinity to a finite value of z. I can solve the equation for small enough momentum still, because there is a control parameter. There is a small parameter in my equation, omega divided by t and q divided by t. So not surprising, it's not surprising I can solve the equation and expand the solution over omega over t. Okay, so for this operator O, I find my green function to be proportional to I omega, which for omega much less than t. Suppose this is correct, then I can go to the Weichmann green function and find that the Weichmann green function integrated over the whole space, that is, go to the zero momentum limit, is equal to n squared t to the fourth. The thing that I would like to compare to is not the correlator of f squared and f squared, but actually FF dual and FF dual, whose computation is exactly the same because it's coupled to the axion, the Ramon-Ramon scalar that has the same equation, minimally of a minimally coupled scalar. And the quantity here is interesting because in the standard model, if one remember the standard model has baryon number violation, this is the quantity that control how fast is baryon number violated at finite temperature. This is the so-called Chern-Simons diffusion rate, which in the standard model has the dependence on T and alpha, that it's alpha weak, the weak coupling to the fifth log 1 over alpha T to the 4. Here we find something similar, the same quantity in the strongly coupled theory that by dimension it's forced to be t to the fourth, but the dependence on the coupling is now soft coupling square. So assuming this is correct, then the that behavior should smoothly go to this behavior as I dial my soft coupling. The n and also the n dependence is a little bit more subtle here. It can be argued to be n square that the n dependence, the alpha must be the tooth coupling. I think people have not thought very much about that. So there is not much. There's no rigorous argument that it must be the tooth coupling. Okay, but this is some computation that I cannot compare with hydrodynamics because the F square is not a hydrodynamic variable. It's not. What I want is the correlator of some charge density that can show some diffusive behavior. And in N equal 4 theory, I have the SO4 R symmetry. When I pick up one charge and I compute, pick up one charge, and I can compute the correlation function of this charge by IDS CFT. Okay, now the equation for the bulk field. The bulk field that coupled to the R current is the gauge field, some gauge field which in the linearized order obeys the Maxwell equation. I can fix a nice gauge, which is U in the radial, A in the radial direction is zero, and then proceed and write down the field equation. And I have my control, the parameter that I can expand over the momentum over temperature, and I have I can solve the equations. This is the equation. This is the solution. So let me try to explain it. If I fix the boundary value for so these are four equations, but for wave traveling along the z direction, the interesting equation I'm looking at is for the A, the time component of the gauge field and the Z component of the gauge field. Fixing the boundary condition, if I fix the boundary condition, I can find the whole solution. Here I write down actually the derivative, but one can integrate that and find the whole solution. The expansion parameter is interesting. It's omega over T, but Q square over T square. Q is the three momentum. Let me just present to you the final result then. This comes out to be equal to what we expected from hydrodynamics. That is Q square divided by I omega minus dQ square, from which I can read out the diffusion constant for the R charge at strong coupling. And it's very simple, 1 over 2 pi t. So again, this is technically not a very simple calculation that gives me the some quantity that one would spend a lot of time computing, even at weak coupling. I will talk about that. So there is some contact terms also that is the same as at zero temperature because it's basically UV. Okay, so another comment I want to make is that the diffusion constant goes to a constant when the tooth coupling goes to infinity. A little bit digestion of this result. How, in principle, I can determine? I have some rough estimate of this diffusion constant. So diffusion is basically due to Brownian motion. I have, if I think about some molecule in the air, then it's diffused by just going through a lot of these Brownian steps. Suppose L is my mean free path, and the typical velocity of the particle is V, then the mean free time is L divided by V. During a time interval t, then I make n step, which is t divided by mean free path, the whole time divided by mean free path. and the distance I travel scaled like square root of the number of steps because it's Brownian motion. So it's square root of t multiplied to the square root of mean free path and the velocity. Now let me compare that to the equation, what my diffusion equation says. D rho over dt is the Laplacian of rho. Then rho, if it starts from delta function, it widened to a Gaussian. And the width of the Gaussian is also scaled like t when the proportionality constant is the diffusion constant. So the estimate for the diffusion constant is the product of the mean free path of the particle that carrying the charge and multiplied to the velocity. So we have in our case, the velocity is 1 because it's ultra-relativistic. Of course, this picture breaks down at very strong coupling, but still, let me try to use that to deduce the length of the diffusion, the mean free path. The mean free path then must be 1 over t, which means that the mean free path is comparable to the inverse momentum of a particle, which is very large because then all the particles are off shell, and there is no kinetic type of equation like a Boltzmann equation that assume the on shellness of particle that can give me this answer.
That's what you deduce from the duality. I mean, is it at all surprising that it doesn't depend on any dimensionless parameters?
The g squared n.
Yeah, g squared n and n. Yeah.
From which?
This doesn't depend on the g squared n. Is that surprising or?
It's probably not, because the mean free path cannot be much smaller than that.
It can
be much smaller. Otherwise, it's still diffusive if you look at the large enough distance, but the microscopic picture is no longer accurate. That I have here is no longer accurate.
Where classically you're scattering length for shorter than your Rayleigh length, presumably you really just sort of don't scatter that much. You
do scatter, but it becomes the scattering becomes non-independent anymore.
Yeah.
So it seems that the applicability of this equation is wider than the applicability of that picture. That's what I want to say. Yeah. At least in this theory, it's really work that way. Okay, so I can also find the correction to my pole by just going one step further in my expansion over omega over t. And that is the pole. I didn't try to really look hard at how in space-time the this function, the retarded Green function, approach when I approach the light cone. So that's something could be interesting.
Bottom of the previous transparency, you had a comparison to weak coupling.
Yeah, I will show you that. Yeah, I will come to that at some time. Yeah. Now, okay. So, how about the usual hydrodynamics? What is the correlator of t mu nu? So here, I couple my t mu nu with the gravitons living in the bulk, and I can write down the equation for the graviton. Now, this equation decouples into a number of set of equations that decouple from each other. One of the set corresponds to the shear mode that I talked to you about in the t mu nu goes along the z direction, and variation is along the x direction. And some of the components should correspond to the sound wave. Well, finding the sound wave from gravity would be very nice, but we haven't been able to do that. So let me concentrate on the shear mode. The equations are almost exactly the same, and it's not almost exactly. There is some difference, and the result, not surprisingly, is. Equal is also diffusive type correlator. So this is the correlator. This Q is along the Z direction, and I compute the T0x with T0x, where x is perpendicular to Z. Okay, and let me recall that from hydrodynamics, I predict my pole to be at this value, Q squared multiplied to a constant that depends on the viscosity, and I can deduce the viscosity because I know the thermodynamics of the system. I know what is energy density and the pressure from the black hole thermodynamics. There exists another way to compute this coefficient eta by using the so-called Kubo's formula, which is a formula in statistical physics that relate directly this constant to a certain limit of the imaginary part of the stress tensor retarded Green function, and I can it give me the same answer as this, which somehow is a non-trivial verification of the fact that the thermodynamics should contain a three-quarter. Otherwise, the Kubo formula would give me a different answer for the viscosity than the pole in the propagator. Okay. In other words, the prefactor here is what entering the Kubo formula, and it is the same as the product of the thermodynamics and eta. Now, let me mention how one can, in principle, compute the shear viscosity in field theory. So all of that, in principle, one, if the coupling is small, one can do the field theoretical calculation. You have a question? And for a simple theory like weakly coupled 5-4 theory at finite temperature, this has been actually done by Jeon and Yaffe, and recently by Wang and Hines. So the basic idea is to use the Kubo formula again to compute some imaginary part of the retarded Green function constructed from the stress energy tensor. But what I actually discovered very soon is that in order to compute this diagram in the zero momentum limit, one has, in Minkowski space, one has to resum an infinite number of Feynman diagram. And it is very, the reason is that the zero temperature, the zero momentum limit of this diagram correspond to these two points separated by a large space-time distance. And the two particles that travel from one distance to another can scatter off other particles because we have medium, we have the finite temperature. So what happened is that we have to resum a whole infinite number of diagrams, which then gather together to an integral equation that is the same equation that one can obtain from some Boltzmann equations. And from that, one find the shear viscosity, which is a lot of work. The original calculation is contained in a 200-page PhD thesis. In gauge theory, it's even less well known. I think all the transport coefficient has been computed from assuming some type of Boltzmann equation is correct. I'm not sure if anybody has rigorously showed that it arises from field theory. But assuming that everything worked out nicely, then this is what we expect for the coupling dependence of the transport coefficient. We should see the transport coefficient goes to constant. For example, the diffusion constant goes to a constant. Now, at weak coupling, the mean free path diverges because its particle does not scatter off each other very frequently, and the blows up here is known. The coefficient here is difficult to compute. and it goes to infinity. So assuming that it's the curve is continuous and monotonic, what one thing one should be able to do is to compute the 1 over 12 coupling correction to the strong coupling result and check whether it's really positive. And that would establish the trend. But that has not been done. OK. So computing using this IDS CFT prescription with the model, with putting some reasonable boundary condition on the horizon, one can compute the thermal green function, and the thermal green function does show hydrodynamic behavior, which means that probably both are correct. This ADS CFT correspondence and the hydrodynamics are correct. Oh, they are both wrong. Okay. So this is non-trivial check, I think, and what we haven't done is to see whether one can have can see sound wave propagating from ADS CFT, whether in some component of the energy momentum tensor correlator we have a pole.
So sound wave just means the density. Wait.
Yes, the density wave, T0, T0 correlator.
Is there some reason you'll be able to find it? Is it just technical?
It's the equations are a little bit harder, and we haven't done that. We also would like to understand the more deeply the reason for the, we would like to have a more general prescription for computing 3-point, 4-point correlation functions, because this prescription here, actually it worked for 2-point function, but we don't know how to generalize it to more than 2-point. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes.
So the boundary conditions you're using on the horizon for the retarded Green's function are the same as the quasi-normal modes that people study for black holes.
Is that true? I'm not sure if it's the same.
Well,
are you sure?
We require that the fields go to zero at infinity rather than go to some fixed
mm-hmm.
things. But you
mm-hmm.
look for fields which are purely ingoing
mm-hmm.
on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
In asymptotic flat space, they'd be purely outgoing at infinity.
Mm-hmm.
But in ADS, you just
I would think the quasi-normal mode, when I compute the quasi-normal mode, I fix some initial condition, and then one of the way I can look at the quasi-normal mode, one of the way I look at the quasi-normal mode is that I fix some initial condition and put the causality condition that everything should not come out from the black hole, and then see how the fluctuation evolved with time. I look at that for the gauge field, and the answer is that there is a mode which decays like e to the minus d square q dq square, which is so there is a quasi-normal mode. There is a mode, the fluctuation around this metric, which has this dependence on.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, so it should be that the poles in the retarded Green's function agree with the quasi-normal frequencies.
Yeah.
And when you specify arbitrary initial data and just evolve as you were doing,
then
it's the late time behavior
uh-huh.
is dominated by the imaginary part of the sort of lowest quasi-normal frequency. The other ones die off faster.
Yeah.
You just expand your initial data basically into
uh-huh.
quasi-normal frequency.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So
it's probably, yes. It's,
yeah, so I'm wondering if people have calculated quasi-normal frequencies.
On that particular, in this particular matrix, I haven't seen.
Well, we
I haven't seen.
I mean,
for the ADS5 with the.
So my student and I calculated quasi-normal frequencies for black holes in ADS5. We did spherical black holes.
Yeah.
You're doing a plane.
Yeah.
Ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for large radius, when spherical black holes are large compared to the AES radius, the metric's essentially identical.
I see.
So the curvature, you know, the spheres don't matter much.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, so we calculated quasi-normal frequencies down for black holes of various sizes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at, I think, you know, we have
that
large
would,
black
yeah.
holes.
Uh-huh. That would correspond to very to wave that has short wavelength compared to the radius, right? Is that what you say?
The black hole itself is large compared to the AES radius.
Yes.
The quasi-normal modes.
What is the momentum? In which regime should I see that? What type of behavior?
So you calculated for small q squared.
I calculated for small q squared, but my black hole is flat. It's flat.
That's okay, because small q squared just means the lowest frequency. Right? So that's the, and we calculated the first few. And so the lowest frequency should agree.
You have quantized this q quantized in your case?
Oh, we should talk about
that. Yeah, we should talk about that.
Your outlook to sound waves, is there a reason to expect anything else than 1 over 3 because of the conformal invariance equation?
It's 1 over 3. The real part of the pole must be located at 1, where, yeah, 1, the speed of sound should be 1 over square root of 3 because we know thermodynamics. It is thermodynamics, so it's a fix. But the damping rate for the sound wave is related to the transport coefficient.
Oh, okay.
So it's an imaginary part.
Have you thought about the kind of theories which Joe was talking about earlier in the week, where they're n equals 4 in the ultraviolet, conformal in the ultraviolet, but then the SUSY is broken, so the coupling starts to run below some scale.
Mm-hmm.
And if so,
is there anything?
If I call that scale M,
mm-hmm.
will the kinds of things you're doing work for temperatures only much bigger than M or for temperatures smaller than M?
It's bigger than, it's sure work for temperature much bigger than M, because then
sure.
the infrared doesn't matter much.
I think the temperature is smaller than M. You actually end up just doing thermal field theory on the gravity side as well, because you just have a periodic Euclidean solution and you end up just having the modes in the bulk. Which are interacting like fields.
Uh-huh. Do I correctly understand that at small temperature, actually, if you do just classical gravity, you don't see the non-trivial thermodynamics at all.
So you don't see it. You're right. That's right.
You don't
see it.
Yeah.
You really have to do loops. You don't see it.
Yeah.
Classical.
So it's at zero temperature that the thermodynamic, let's say, free energy is n to the zero power when. Okay. At high temperature, it's n to the n square. So in the regime where this is n square, you can, it's classical, yeah, you can do it. In n to the zero, it's harder. And there's a phase transition.
There's been some attempt to study the transition, both the confinement transition and Charles symmetry rating transition in those solutions. Alex Mutual, he's around. Where our postdoc has done a lot of, it's not easy because when you put in all the effects, the solutions get kind of complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any examples where they're really known in closed form.
Mm-hmm. Even the nature of the phase transition, how it goes,
is the kind of transition and which whether there are separate transitions and
mm-hmm.
so on.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called the black hole membrane paradigm.
Yeah.
Where one derives dissipative-like equations from
uh-huh.
Einstein's equations when you put in black hole boundary conditions. And it seems to me that there must be some connection between that
uh-huh.
and the hydrodynamic and fusion
in
the,
in
some,
that.
Some, because you have a black hole horizon sitting there. I don't know what the connection exactly is, but it's they both feel the same.
Yes.
That way you directly get some kind of, you know,
the black hole,
instead of going through the formalism of field theory.
Yeah. Yeah, for the black hole, it's I tried to learn that, but actually I couldn't make use of that. Thermodynamics has a negative for the black hole. The thermodynamics is reverse. The specific heat has minus side, and the bulk viscosity that they have in this membrane, the paradigm, has also the wrong sign.
Really?
So.
Well, but the black holes in ADS are different, right? So a black hole, I mean, your black holes always have positive specific heat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, mine has.
Of course, it agrees with the field theory. Mm-hmm. The energy is a function. Mm-hmm. The temperature is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So
you say translating the.
And they should have. It should work better than the asymptotic. The membrane paradigm was all developed for asymptotic black holes and asymptotic flat space.
Mm-hmm. I see. But in principle, it could be translated to that type
of
thing.
Any further questions? Thanks, Sonny.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah.